This is Lisa Loving, and we are speaking with Dan Savage, our favorite sex advice columnist and actually publisher of our favorite weekly newspaper, The Stranger, editor of The Stranger in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Dan, thank you so much for being here with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Dan has written loads of books, but his new book is The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family. I love the book, Dan.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm glad you had a chance to read it before we talked.
Yeah. And I don't, you know what? I don't even want to get into too many details about it because I don't want to steal your thunder. So when you're doing your book reading in Portland, Oregon, October 9th, which I believe is Saturday night.
I think it's Sunday night, actually.
Sunday night, right on. And we're thinking that it's at 7:30 p.m. And, Dan, you know, I loved The Kid. Right? The Kid is another, it's a memoir that you wrote about your wonderful sweetheart and how you guys came to adopt a kid. I just want to say, Dan, also you wrote Skipping Towards Gomorrah. With just a few exceptions, I feel like you're kind of like our modern day Irma Bombeck.
Yeah, Irma Bombeck with sodomy and recreational drugs. But yeah, okay, I would embrace that, yes.
I bet she talked about those things after a few too many martinis. So, okay, The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family. It's a lot. It's about your beautiful family, which is so, it's just like every other family. Do you feel like your family's like every other family?
Yeah, which can make it hard to write about. There's that old Anna Karenina that, you know, every happy family is the same and every unhappy family is unique. But one of the things I kind of set out to show in this book is that, you know, in some ways we're like any other family. In some ways we're very unique. And not just my nuclear family, not just me and Terry and our son Deej, but my mother and her husband, my brother and his girlfriend, my sister and her boyfriend, my other brother and his wife, that, you know, a gay relationship doesn't exist only, you know, in the back room of a gay bar, that it exists in the context of all these other family relationships. And since most gay people are from, you know, straight families, it exists in the context of these heterosexual marriages and relationships and is held up against them and judged in the light of them, and it can't be separated from them.
You know, Dan, I've read Savage Love for years. How many years have you done that column?
14 years.
One of the things that strikes me about it, and it's been in a variety of incarnations here in Portland, Oregon, I'll say. It's been in a variety of different publications, and now people can read about it, can read your column in the Mercury. I believe it's also in the Village Voice. Isn't that accurate?
Yeah, the Village Voice, Chicago Reader, SF Weekly. It's in a paper in Hong Kong. It's in a paper in Tel Aviv. It's all over the place.
Now, one of the things that strikes me about reading Savage Love is that it is a sex column, and for someone who feels that they're coming from a sort of middle-of-the-road gender sexual point of view, it would probably be quite shocking, and it might even freak them out and make them uncomfortable to talk about the kind of sex that we just don't talk about very often. In fact, I remember when I first started reading it, you used to have a certain salutation that people would write, you know, hey, faggot, instead of hey, dear editor, or whatever.
Or dear Abby. I sort of chose it because it had the same big, flat Chicago A. Dear Abby, hey, faggot.
Hey, faggot. But one of the things, I'm going to come back to the same place and say, one of the things that strikes me when I think back on all the years that I've read your column, and I think about the twists and turns that you had with that column here, even in the Portland market, it just seems like a lot of what you're doing, the big body of what you're doing, is to show us who we are and let us know that we're really not freaks. We're really not deviants, even if maybe we want to urinate on each other. Now, am I grabbing at that?
No. I think the one thing I want people to take away from the column always is that abnormal is normal. Everybody has at least one thing that turns them on that isn't from, you know, the normal menu, and that's okay. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. It matters how you're doing it, and it matters who you're doing it with. And it matters, you know, how ethical you are about whatever it is you want to do. And consent, I think, is always the magic ingredient that makes even the wildest sex absolutely kosher. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want people to get when they come to the column. And, you know, whatever it is, you know, somebody who has one kink may read about somebody who has another kink and then feel like, oh, I'm not so alone. Or, oh, you know, that'll open their minds. I'm always shocked when people who are into, you know, one thing that a lot of people think is extreme go wrinkle their noses at other people's kinks. It's like, well, what about yours?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like, we're all freaks. I mean, human sexuality is so interesting and twisted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I try to get at in the column. And, you know, whatever it is we're talking about, whether we're talking about people urinating on each other, whether we're talking about bondage, whether we're talking about, you know, swinging from chandeliers with goats under the bed.
I missed that one, though.
What it all comes down to is how you conduct yourself in those relationships and whether you're being, you know, a good, ethical sexual adventurer or whether you're being a scumbag, and I don't suffer scumbags gladly.
We are speaking with Dan Savage. He is a sex columnist. His column is Savage Love. He's a weekly newspaper editor of the Stranger newspaper in Seattle, and his newest book is called The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family. He's going to be speaking live at Powell's Books on Burnside on Sunday, October 9th.
At 7:30 p.m. I just looked it up.
Yeah, it's 7:30 p.m. Dan, okay, all this is getting to something, right? When I first picked up Savage Love, I think it was maybe in 1989 or 1990, early 90s. When you started writing that column, you set out to freak people out, didn't you?
You know, I really didn't. What I set out to do was to write a column about sex that used the language that people actually used when they talked about sex, as opposed to some sort of, like, respectful sexual Sanskrit, and to, you know, talk about the sex people were actually having, which is kind of a virtue that arose in the 80s and 90s because of the AIDS crisis. Like, suddenly, when you talked about sex, you weren't supposed to just talk about the sex that everyone was supposed to be having or you would like to think other people are having. It suddenly became really crucial and life-saving to talk about the sex people were having, even if it was kind of crazy or aberrant or not missionary position vaginal intercourse. Because certain things that were, you know, that seemed safe before the AIDS epidemic, say missionary position vaginal intercourse, once the AIDS epidemic came along, maybe were less safe than other things that seemed more extreme. Say, for instance, you know, mutual masturbation in a dungeon is safer than, you know, missionary, you know, gay anal sex in a relationship. And so suddenly you had to have these conversations that no one ever expected to have because it was a life and death matter. And that's what I wanted the column to do.
So as you started out, your dream, your vision was to just talk reasonably, actually, about stuff that people weren't talking about. Did you have any idea that 15 years later, you would be doing the same thing around just the simple act of consummating your family?
No, I didn't. I certainly didn't think that 15 years later I would be still writing the column and still enjoying it as much as I do. And, you know, writing about my family, it's funny because, you know, sometimes I mention myself in the column and I'm always almost teasing. I just, like, will make up a joke and make myself the butt of the joke and it's not sincere. But then I write these books where I, like, sort of sincerely discuss my family and the way my family works. Because I think, you know, 25 years ago when I came out, if you came out, you know, 25 years ago, what you're saying when I was 15 years old, what you're saying was, I want to live with integrity, I want to be who I am, I want to be honest, and I want to kiss boys. So I'm not going to have kids, I'm never going to get married, there'll be places I can't live, jobs I can't have, but I want to live with integrity and kiss boys. And so I'm going to sacrifice all those things. And, you know, all these years later, all these things that we thought, you know, gay men who I think are anyone gay or lesbian who's over 30, all these things we thought we were giving up are suddenly available to us, and we're having to adjust and wrestle with issues and decisions that we thought we were going to be able to avoid all our lives. And I wanted to, you know, write these books to sort of, you know, the book about adopting, mm-hmm. and now this book about marriage to sort of wrestle with that.
Because that is what I really wanted to get down to. I read the most wonderful interview with John Stewart that was published this past weekend in the Guardian newspaper in England. And one of the things he said a lot of things that were very surprising. Like, the interviewer wanted to really nail him down, you know, your show, The Daily Show, is that really your politics? Are you a political animal, or do you just write jokes, basically? And one of the things that John Stewart said was, if you look at the history of the United States, just the history of this continent, of European people on this continent, you know, it's amazing when you look at where we are now politically. And the fact that gay marriage is basically considered to be one of the watershed issues of our time right now, that says something. You know, basically he's trying to make a comment about how difficult it is to organize reasonable people with moderate views. Mm-hmm. But what do you think it means that gay marriage is such a watershed issue for our society now? I mean, did you ever think you'd see that day? And I look at the wonderful young people You know, in Portland, Oregon, of course, there was a too brief window of opportunity, was it a year ago and more, when people were allowed to legally get married, and it changed the whole feel of the city. I had no idea. So what do you think that means? You know, how is it that we got to this place? And did you think we ever would?
I think it ultimately means that we're still struggling with gender equality, because really that's what gay marriage is about. Straight people like to say that some straight people, not all, that allowing gay people to marry is going to redefine marriage in this new and shocking way. And actually, straight people have redefined marriage to an extent that it no longer makes any logical sense to exclude gay people. Marriage, once upon a time, was a man taking ownership of a woman and her reproductive organs and creating creating his heirs through her. And, you know, a woman was a man's property, and the father gave the woman away to the groom. And all of that is not, you know, some of those rituals survive as a, you know, show or a play, but marriage is two autonomous individuals taking each other as equals. It's egalitarian. And marriage is whatever two people say that it is. You know, two straight people can be married and monogamous or not monogamous and married. They can have kids or not have kids. They can live together or not live together. Sex can be central to their commitment or peripheral. And so when you look at this sort of gender equals marriage, you know, that is the institution as straight people currently practice it, and gay people have a role to play in that institution. We are as capable and qualified to, you know, enter into this, you know, new world of egalitarian gender role banished marriages as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I think that the opposition to gay marriage is, you know, there's still people who have problems with female equality and gender equality. And a lot of the opposition to gay marriage is based on that. A lot of it's Bible, because there are some people in this country who believe that, who confuse the Bible with the Constitution mm-hmm. and civil rights with, you know, whatever God gave you permission to do, which they're not the same thing. But yeah, I'm happy that the debate has landed on us now. And wherever it's debated, wherever you see gay marriage practiced and take root, people get over it. Just in Massachusetts, the sponsor of the Senate bill to put an anti-gay marriage amendment on the Constitution, on the ballot to amend the Massachusetts Constitution, the sponsor of the bill voted against it a year later. Voted against his own bill.
Right.
Because he'd seen that gay marriage took nothing away from straight people, and it helped gay and lesbian residents of Massachusetts. It didn't harm anybody.
We are speaking with Dan Savage. He will be live in Portland, Oregon this Sunday night, October 9th at 7:30 p.m. at Powell's Books on Burnside. And actually, even though we feel really close to Dan Savage, he lives right up in Seattle, still he'll be our guest, and it'll be very exciting to see that. His newest book, The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family. And I didn't want to talk too much about the contents of the book because it's not at all what I thought it was going to be, Dan, okay?
Uh-huh.
And it was just warm, and it was like, this could have been my auntie, right? This could have been my aunties talking and arguing and stuff like that. It just felt like my family feels. My family's a very close family, and yet we're very divided politically. Mm-hmm. And the thing that really surprised me, Dan, frankly, is how much I grew to love Terry, your sweetheart. I just love Terry.
I do, too. You'll have to leg wrestle me for him, though.
And just the whole, can you, just for our listeners, I mean, again, I really want to encourage people to come, pick up this book, read through this book, and come to this event. Because, Dan, you're very controversial, even within the confines of the left wing politically. You're a very controversial guy. And I remember when we had you on the air during KBOO's live elections coverage, I think in 2000,
mm-hmm.
and you had made this huge statement about being a Republican and supporting the invasion of Afghanistan. And it was thought-provoking, and people actually had to talk about it, and, which I really liked.
But I'm not a Republican.
Okay.
I had joined the Republican Party in 1996 as a joke. So I registered as a Republican. So I would amend that.
Okay.
I am certainly not a Republican.
Okay.
Unless you're a Republican, if you're pro-gay marriage, pro-national health insurance, you voted for Al Gore, and you gave money to John Kerry, if that's what a Republican is in America today, then I guess I'm a Republican.
Fair enough. But I will say that your antics have caused people to actually have to check themselves and debate whatever they thought that they were thinking at the time, and that's what I really value in you. But one of the things that just surprised me about this book is, I mean, as I was growing up, when I was in high school, one of my best friends in high school was, he was 16 years old, and he came out as being gay. which was, it just took so much courage. I don't think that I realized that even at the time. And as I've grown older and I've had friends from this community and that community, some communities really are more identified as being bohemian. And I think that the gay community, you'd have to say, is more identified with being bohemian. You know, people who live their own lives in so many ways.
But in a lot of ways, we were identified as bohemian because we weren't allowed to live any other way. It wasn't a free choice for many gay and lesbian couples.
Because that's where I was going to go with you. I mean, it just seems like here's instead of people struggling for the right to as it's so often framed, to live a deviant lifestyle, which is what Rush Limbaugh would say, right? Really, this issue brings home to me how important it is that people should just live whatever their view of a normal life is. I mean, these terms, they're confused in my head now. That's where I'm going with that.
Yeah, well, one of the things I lay out in the book is that my brother, Billy, if you were to describe, and he's heterosexual, if you were to describe the contours of his primary relationship and describe mine and leave out the genders of everyone involved, you would think Billy was the gay brother and I was the straight brother. My brother, Billy, has a wonderful girlfriend who he's been with forever, and they're not monogamous, they don't live together, and they don't want kids, they're never going to have kids, and Billy spends all of his disposable income on, you know, trips to Europe and art and theater. And I, you know, have a boyfriend, and, you know, we have a kid, we may have another kid, Terry is a stay-at-home parent, and if you described that, you would think that we were straight and Billy was gay. And it just goes to show there's no such thing as a gay lifestyle or a straight lifestyle. There's just too many straight people out there living the quote-unquote gay lifestyle, and too many gay people like my boyfriend and I who are now living the quote-unquote straight lifestyle for those labels to mean anything anymore.
I love that, though. I love that about it. Miss, I want to ask you one more thing. What are some of the other aspects of the way we live as families in the United States that you think that basically, you know, the wider community should come to grips with? Maybe we don't see it. I don't know. What are some more myths about family life in America that many of us maybe think are gender controlled? Do you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah.
Unless you're looking at marriage, but what are some of the other things
that are specifically tied to gender where we screw it up?
Yeah.
That gender is determinative. I do think gender does kind of shove people one direction or other. There are things about, you know, assumptions you can make about men or women that are broadly true. You know, I don't know very many women who are into pro football. And so if I hear someone's a pro football fan, I think probably a guy. But, you know, everybody, the thing about gender that sometimes I think the left has a problem with is we want to say, you know, if you give boys dolls and girls trucks, they'll grow up to be not sexist, and boys can play with dolls and girls can play with trucks. And if you have any experience at all with kids, if you give boys dolls and girls trucks, they trade. Or the boys use the dolls as a gun, and the girls put a dress on the truck and call it Susie. What we have to come to with gender is recognizing that, you know, there are some things about gender that seem to be inborn and naturally incline boys to certain things and girls to certain other interests, and that's cool. But there are people who differ, and the people who, you know, the girls who want to play with trucks and the girls who want to play with dolls have to be made to feel like that's okay, that their difference isn't a threat to anybody else, and it doesn't mean that they're bad. And you can be gender non-conforming while recognizing that a lot of people conform to gender roles because it's who they are, and it makes them happy. But it has to be a free choice, you know. There are women who are stay-at-home moms who love it, that's all they want to do, and they shouldn't be made to feel guilty about it by the left. And there are women who want to work and guys who want to stay home and be parents, the full-time parent, and they shouldn't be made to feel guilty about that by the right.
Right on. And we are speaking with Dan Savage. He is coming to Portland Sunday, October 9th, 7:30 p.m. He's going to be at Powell's Books on Burnside. And his newest book is called The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family. Dan, as you were putting this project together, were there any aspects of the whole marriage itself is so fraught. It's fraught with all kinds of emotional baggage and even material baggage and stuff. I mean, it took my sweetheart and I believe 15 years, 12 years before we got married. And we argued about it for years and years. Was there anything about this process as you went through it that surprised you?
Yeah, there was a lot about it that surprised me. What really surprised me was our reaction to it as, you know, a male couple, as both guys. You know, when we were my mother was saying, get married, and we started thinking about it, and my son was saying, don't get married, don't get married. And the more we sort of delved into, you know, the ritual and the symbolism, the more we felt ridiculous about it, because it really is, you know, a marriage ceremony really kind of is this great pantomime of heterosexual sex, and it's all heterosexual symbolism. And ultimately, you know, the marriage ceremonies is typically practiced in the United States are, you know, about the woman, about the bride. She gets to be the princess. She wears the dress as big as, you know, as much fabric as the Goodyear blimp. It goes into this one dress. And it's, she's the star. And so what does it mean to have a wedding without a woman involved? I compare it in the book to a, you know, a Bloody Mary without a stalk of celery. It's, you know, you can still have the Bloody Mary without a stalk of celery. A stalk of celery kind of looks nice and makes it official, but it's not crucial. And we kind of felt that way about, you know, being guys at a wedding. Like, you need a groom at a wedding, like you need a stalk of celery and a Bloody Mary. And so what I sort of come to is that it's going to take, and what we learned doing it, it's going to take, you know, several generations of gays and lesbians to evolve and grow and come to their own with marriage as a possibility for them before our own rituals and symbols evolve and emerge. When you look at the wedding ceremony across different cultures create weddings that have meaning for those folks in those cultures. You know, a Jewish wedding ceremony is different from, you know, an African-American Southern Baptist wedding ceremony. They're both weddings, both equally valid. And some sort of, like, same-sex wedding ceremony ritual is going to evolve, but it's going to take generations. Right now, for a same-sex couple, it does feel a little bit like you're in borrowed clothes that are a little ill-fitting, you know. You're taking this thing, and it's not yet ours, and it still feels a little awkward for us.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Dan Savage, and he's going to be reading from his book, The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family, on Sunday night at Powell's Books. That's Sunday, October 9th at 7:30 p.m. at Powell's Books on Burnside. You know, Dan, as I was looking through this book and I was reading through the book and thinking of all the twists and turns that you and Terry went through to decide, it made me think of people that I know here in Portland who, when it became possible for our friends, neighbors, relatives to get married for that brief period, all too brief period, the whole emotion of the town changed. It's like the entire city of Portland became one big wedding shower. And you could drive past the, or ride your bike past the county building that was issuing the licenses, and there was a line that went all the way around the building of people in tuxes and dresses and flowers. And I just have to say, when all that was struck down by the courts, I was really, I wasn't sure what that even meant. I don't know if you can dampen a human being's love for someone else, but I just want to put it to you in your crystal ball. What is in the future for all of our friends that got married and they want to see their relationships honored in every state they go through?
It'll come to America, and eventually it will be national. It's just going to, America's going to be last. America's always last when it comes to rights. You know, you think about Pakistan having a female prime minister. You know, in the 80s, and we're still fantasizing about maybe one day we'll have a female president.
Well, we've got Gina Davis.
We got Gina Davis. Yeah, we have a fictional female president. And when it happens here, you know, America will talk about itself and pay itself compliments as if it had happened here first.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom usually seems to happen here last. Mm-hmm. You look at slavery, and Great Britain did away with it in the 18th century without a war.
1830s.
Mm-hmm. The 1800s, without a war. They did it with a vote,
right.
And we had to do it with a war, and we pay ourselves compliments about that war. But we were last, and we will be last on this, too, but we will get there.
Okay, let me just ask you one more question, because we're already running out of interview. As looking at this book, you've written so many different things, coming from so many different places, but looking at The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family, what do you think is the most important thing for KBOO listeners listening right now to know about your experience just, like I said, consummating your relationship with Terry? What's the most important message that you draw from this project, this book?
That it, you know, it's funny when you write about relationships and marriage and children and family, because as a writer you want to avoid cliché. But all the clichés seem to apply. You know, it changed everything for us, and it changed nothing, really, about our relationship. But it did have this transformative, intangible effect on us. and on Deej. And what I'd like people to take away is this idea that this knowledge that there are gay and lesbian couples out there with kids, and a lot of those kids are straight, and they need the sort of security and the financial, even just the financial benefits, the nuts and bolts that marriage brings, that any other kid needs who has two parents who are thinking about marriage. And denying gay people the right to marry harms not just those gay couples, but their kids who will one day, in 95% of the cases, grow up to be straight folks. And so by denying gays the right to marry, you're actually punishing a lot of future heterosexuals.
So, yeah, kind of what I hear you saying is every child needs a daddy and a daddy.
Every child needs people who love him. And that can be a couple, it can be a single person. It can be, you know, a grandmother and a daughter raising the grandchild together. But whatever we can do to strengthen the bonds of how whatever sort of family unit comes together around a child to care for and love and raise that child, we should do.
Right on. So, Dan Savage, I just want to thank you again for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Dan Savage, fabulous sex columnist. His sex column is called Savage Love. You can read it locally here in Portland in the Mercury newspaper. He is the editor of The Stranger in Seattle, which you can read online. I highly recommend that. The Stranger actually is, I think, one of the best alternative weekly newspapers in the nation. And Dan Savage's new book is called The Commitment, Love, Sex, Marriage, and My Family. And you're listening to KBOO Portland. I'm Lisa. Thanks.